I'm John Kroll. Thank you for joining us for No Limits following our live coverage of the President's press conference. On this No Limits, we will talk about celebrating science in Indiana. This Saturday, hundreds of people will gather at the Indiana State Fairgrounds for Celebrate Science Indiana. We'll talk about how involved Hoosiers are in science education and how we could draw even more people in. We will talk about all of this with our guests, Robert Yost of IUPUI's Department of Biology, Peter Kissinger, a Purdue chemistry professor and a life sciences business entrepreneur, and Dr. Jennifer Hicks of the Indiana Department of Education. You can join the conversation by calling us toll-free at 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a question or comment via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Please do join the conversation. Now, I would like to welcome our guest, Dr. Robert Yost, again, of the IUPUI Department of Biology. Dr. Yost, welcome. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Good to have you here. Peter Kissinger, who is a Purdue University chemistry professor and a life sciences business entrepreneur. That's a mouthful. I'm going to stumble over that one at some point during the program. Peter, welcome to the program.
You're doing well with it, John, and we're very happy to be here. Thank you.
And Dr. Jennifer Hicks, science curriculum specialist with the Indiana Department of Education. Jenny, you prefer Jenny. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, John. I'm really glad to be here today.
It's good to have you all here. Let's talk a little bit, since the reason for us sort of gathering today is this event on Saturday. Could we talk a little bit about what Celebrate Science Indiana is and, you know, what's involved, how it came about? Robert Yost, I think that's probably the best question for you.
Well, Celebrate Science Indiana actually is an event that became organized through a joint effort of the Science Education Foundation of Indiana and the Indiana Academy of Sciences. And we entered into a discussion to come up with an idea about how to promote science and STEM education in Indiana.
It's actually real quickly, if I could interrupt, what is STEM education? We'll start. Somebody just give me a definition.
Well,
Jennifer Hicks.
Yeah, I think there's some disagreement or at least misunderstanding when we hear the word STEM. We hear a lot of politicians throw the word around. And I think for most of us, it is just a great acronym to quickly, instead of saying science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, it's a quick way to illustrate those four content areas, those four subjects, and bring them together. For other folks, it might actually be an integrated program that integrates all of that content. So it's for us, it's kind of important to be clear about what we mean when we say STEM.
And what do you mean? I mean, do you see when you're describing it, you opened yourself up for that one, for that follow-up. What's your definition?
I think it's difficult to integrate all four content areas really, really well in the classroom. And I think that Robert will probably talk about some things that do that very well. And I think in schools in general, we don't do that much. And I think the jury's out on whether it's really important to integrate all four of those for student success. But I do think it's important to pull in from each of those areas when you can. Robert, do you have any more insight?
Well, I think a good example of that would be something like the designing of a jet engine, for example. When you think about the possibility of making mathematical calculations for how fast that airplane is going to be able to go, you can think about the physics that's involved in how that airplane is going to take off and lift up into the air. And then you can think about the technology that's involved in the application of the engine design itself. So I think there are a lot of different ways that we could potentially integrate all these different fields into one particular application.
And I am sorry, I pulled you off point. You were going to tell me about Celebrate Science Indiana this Saturday, and we do need to get that information out. So,
Celebrate Science Indiana this Saturday is actually going to be an interactive type of day for parents and students and individuals of all ages. And the intent is that folks will come to the Indiana State Fairgrounds on 38th Street and experience interactive activities with various businesses and universities from around the state. But we also are going to have three different presentation areas that are going to be active throughout the day. And there's an opportunity for people to experience living living science, which will actually be presentations on animal behavior and good practices in that regard. We also are going to have an experience science stage, and this is going to be an opportunity for people to see one of WFYI's own individuals, Rick Croslin, from Indiana Expeditions, who will be doing Sciences for Everyone. And then we also have another stage, which is the Celebrate Science stage, and here's an opportunity for people to learn and hear about things that might be a little bit varied. For example, at noon, we're going to have an astronaut talking about math and science education, and we're also going to find out about fossils and why we should be careful about having too much salt in our diet. So we have a lot of variety.
Well, it sounds like you're going to run the gamut. Could you give me the particulars if I wanted to go to this on Saturday morning, if I'm listening to this program and it's a new, what time is there an admission fee or... give me the specifics.
Sure. It is absolutely free. The only charge will be $3 per car to park at the fairgrounds. And the entrance will be off of 38th Street, right near the electronic billboard.
Okay. We are talking about celebrating science here in Indiana and the event this Saturday. We're fortunate to have as our guest Dr. Robert Yost of the IUPUI Department of Biology, Peter Kissinger, Purdue chemistry professor, life sciences business entrepreneur. That's twice I've gotten through it. Dr. Jenny Hicks, science curriculum specialist with the Indiana Department of Education. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Peter Kissinger, what do you think the state of science education is here in Indiana?
It's certainly not where we would like it to be, for sure. And I want to go back to that earlier comment about what is STEM. It needs to be very clear that in the economic sense of what our businesses do in the state, in this global knowledge-based economy, these subjects are not distinct subjects. When we do science, we need technology to make measurements. Everything that we design, feel, and touch involves engineering. Most things in science are quantitative. They're about numbers. Numbers is about math, so we need to measure things. We like to say that science is evidence-based. We make decisions in response to making a measurement for which we need instruments and we need procedures. And so in this global economy that currently is highly troubled, Indiana is not where we really need it to be. And we're working very hard with these organizations to get it up to speed.
In what ways are we not where we need to be?
Well, I think we have too many students who don't finish high school at all, for example. And when you only have 70% of those who enter high school graduating, and they're graduating into a knowledge-based economy, there's not a whole lot for them to do to contribute to society. That's a huge problem. We also have a literacy problem. We have an integration problem of bringing people together in different communities, some of which are much better off than others. I mean, it's not at all a surprise that K through 12 education in communities that support higher ed, like Bloomington and West Lafayette, tend to be way ahead of communities that don't have those assets. And I think a lot of STEM education is based on what society supports, society gets. Mm-hmm. So when we're in an environment that values science, the students are interested in it, the parents are interested in it, the teachers are interested in it, and we're very enthusiastic. Businesses are interested in it. They sponsor field trips. They sponsor science fairs, and we really stir the pot and get everybody rolling. I think the key word is enthusiasm. When we don't have enthusiasm, we lose interest.
What is the primary challenge? I mean, I'll be honest, I'm one of those people, at least, I was a good student when I was in school, but when it came to the sciences, I would go through the process of going to chemistry or physics class when I was in high school. I looked upon that with about as much enthusiasm as, a trip to the dentist or, somebody assigning me the idea of memorizing the yellow pages just for fun. What is it? It sounds like part of what's going on this Saturday is you're trying to break down some of those misconceptions that the sciences can be fun, that they can be approachable. Robert Yost,
That's absolutely right. The idea is that one of the ways that you're going to attract people into understanding what science is all about is to show them that there is the opportunity to ask questions and that scientists really don't have all the answers. Scientists continue to ask questions every day. But the way we build our knowledge base is determined by what we learn from asking those questions. And it can be a lot of fun. It can be very intuitive in some aspects. But it's really an opportunity for individuals to really get in there and ask that question and try and come up with an answer.
Jenny Hicks, you alluded of the Indiana Department of Education. You alluded a few minutes ago when you were doing the definition of STEM, of where your definition is, that we don't do enough perhaps in schools to teach the parts of STEM, the four pieces across the disciplines. The word you used was integrate, but do we do ourselves a disservice in some cases by teaching these things in silos?
I think Robert pointed out pretty well that may definitely be the case. I mean, I think I'm going to back up a bit that okay. I think one of our biggest challenges right now is what is actually going on in the classroom and how are we preparing teachers to be successful at implementing those things. And I think what we have right now is a lack of good teacher preparation, especially in elementary schools, to prepare them for these challenges. In our new science standards, we're asking teachers to integrate engineering, for example, and we obviously expect them to integrate literacy and mathematics appropriately. But those are difficult challenges. How do we prepare teachers to do things they've never done before and they don't feel comfortable with? We've been working for at least the last 3.5 years on the Indiana Science Initiative, which is a systemic initiative in our state to help change at more of a grassroots level on a daily basis in the classroom how science is being taught and how teachers can be educated. We also try to, as Robert alluded to as well, you have to engage the community. You have to engage the administration, businesses, and we've worked very closely with Eli Lilly and company, and they've been extremely supportive of our efforts. So it takes more than just one teacher or one event. It's a systemic issue.
We are talking about celebrating science here in Indiana on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today about Celebrate Science Indiana and the importance of STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, which, as a couple of our guests have pointed out, should be integrated rather than separated. Kissinger, a Purdue University chemistry professor and a life sciences business entrepreneur. Dr. Jennifer Hicks, Science Curriculum Specialist, Indiana Department of Education. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We're talking a little bit, if you could, and I'll start with you, Peter Kissinger. Design what you think would be the perfect science curriculum, or as close to perfect as we could get. Start from what you think to compete, as you alluded to, in this ever-changing world economy with more demands, what Indiana students should be studying and how they should be studying it.
I think the first thing we need to do is recognize that we're all born as scientists. We're all scientists at the beginning. We're curious. We make measurements. We do experiments. We try things, and we learn from those things. So the question is one of how do we avoid discouraging our continuing in this mode of discovery-based learning, experiential learning, we call it, where from our experiences, from our experiments, we learn how the world works. Some ways we seem to deaden this. I think it's largely about enthusiasm. It's largely about...
How do we deaden it, do you think?
I don't know. Sometimes we do it by... I could get myself in trouble by colleges of education that focus on the process of pedagogy rather than the process of understanding the subject. I think this is a huge problem, and Indiana has been working hard to address this through various means, for example, and getting teachers into the classroom who've had considerable business experience before they've gotten into the classroom. Let's face it, our teachers are in a very, very difficult spot when they themselves have not experienced the knowledge-based economy that we're talking about. They are isolated from that, and they don't really understand it. They can't understand it because they've never been in it for the most part. We try to counter that with field trips and encouraging teachers to visit companies and companies to visit schools. We encourage it with science fairs and so forth. But I think there's a basic cultural problem when society puts a high value on, for example, engineering education, science education, medical school, dentistry, law, business, and so forth. And often those who enter colleges of education don't have the same esprit de corps, don't have the same societal support as those who, for example, want to become an aeronautical engineer, to the point that Robert was making. And I think we really need to raise teaching to a much higher level of professional value in society. It is the most important thing that we do. I'm a teacher. I like being a teacher. I'm enthusiastic about being a teacher. And I went into teaching because it basically brings me everlasting life. As we take the knowledge from the past and we translate it to youngsters so they bring it on to future generations. This is highly satisfying. It's fun. And I don't like the way society beats on teachers and blames them for a lot. If I was going to design a science curriculum, the first thing I would do is redesign parents.
Okay. Good luck with that. Well, and I guess I should say, I did not mean to dismiss your point, but your argument there is that really we don't have a systemic value for the educational process, particularly when it comes to the sciences. And I think at some point there's a little bit of synthesis with the point that Jenny Hicks was making a little bit earlier, that we perhaps do not prepare science teachers as well as we could. So let me shift that question rather than the sweeping one of saying, design me the perfect science curriculum and for all Indiana students, and just say then, a more practical level, Jenny Hicks of the Indiana Department of Education, how should we prepare science teachers? What should we expect of them?
Well, I think that we need to make sure they understand the process of science and that they learn to incorporate that well, not just the content. I think in the past there was a lot of focus on content disconnected from the process of science. And teachers often were taught to teach a unit on inquiry and a unit on measurement. And this is another level of integration where we now are expecting them to do the process, the actual practice of science, on a regular basis. I mean, in elementary school, I think we can just start by teaching kindergartners science. It's something that doesn't happen in a lot of our schools. When we've been out there looking at schools in K-3, K-4, there's actually not very much science being taught, and we're trying to work pretty hard to change that. And some of it is pressure on teachers. They feel a lot of pressure in reading and mathematics, and we're trying to help them learn how to incorporate literacy. So that's another aspect, is incorporate all those great literacy skills into your science classroom so you're kind of killing two birds with one stone. You know, you don't feel that pressure just to focus on reading. You can do science. In fact, I would argue you can do science and learn almost just about anything. You can incorporate and integrate almost anything. So I think that we need to prepare our teachers to teach that process of science. We need to support them by providing them time in the school day to gather as science teachers and learn from one another. There's a process called lesson study, which is a really great thing that allows teachers to focus on lessons and learn from other teachers about how to do them better. Principals need to support the time for science and the time for teachers to be in professional learning communities. So it's sort of a multi-layered strategy. It's not just about content. It's about allowing them to teach in an integrated way with process and content.
We are talking about celebrating science here in Indiana and really the idea of science education. We're fortunate to have as our guest Dr. Robert Yost, the IUPUI Department of Biology, Peter Kissinger, who is a Purdue University chemistry professor and life sciences business entrepreneur. I do want to talk about the life sciences business entrepreneur thing here in a bit, and Dr. Jennifer Hicks, science curriculum specialist with the Indiana Department of Education. I actually want to pick up, I was somewhat dismissive of Peter's point that we should redesign parents, but let's take that up somewhat seriously, not in a global way, but suppose I am a parent and I'm thinking, okay, I'm taking Peter's overarching point here that that we're not preparing our students, our children, well to compete in this emerging market. What are some things I could do as a parent to foster better science education for my child? What steps could I take to do that? I'm going to start with you, Robert Yost.
I think one of the big things you could do, John, is really as a parent, become excited yourself. Times have changed. Things are very different than when any of us were young and at home. And if we approach things with the idea that we didn't understand it when we were there, and it was difficult when we were there, now being a parent, I don't want to convey that to my child. I want to be able to help my child and get them excited and think about what's going on. So the best way really to do it is become excited yourself. One of the important things that we hear is that learning is a lifelong adventure. And I think that's true of parents as well, that lifelong learning can happen for any of us, and it can happen at any moment. One of the things that Jenny mentioned was this idea about how do we get science and how do we get people excited. And I think parents can recognize the fact that just walking down into the park with a child is a very good opportunity to get them introduced into science with all the wildlife that would be there, the design of the swing set that's there, if it's something a little bit more advanced that you want to think a little bit about the mathematics or the technology. So there are many opportunities that parents have every day just simply to engage their children in science and technology, engineering and math.
Do we suffer to a degree from the fact that we think of this as kind of specialized knowledge? I mean, I'm thinking, you know, a lot of the founders of this country, knowledge was knowledge. It didn't matter if it was poetry or, you know, if it was attempting to figure out, as Thomas Jefferson did, a more efficient plow, or in Ben Franklin's case, a better way to build a stove that would warm the house. You know, have we lost that sense when we sort of say now, you know, you're going to go into one area or another? This idea, and I guess the reason I'm asking that question is Peter's point that we start out as scientists in life, that we explore, we experiment, we try to figure things out, and it's somewhere along the way. It sounds, Peter, as if you were arguing that there's something about the way we approach education that puts a damper on that sense of curiosity.
I would say one of the challenges that we have is to try to understand that graduation is a false goal. We often think of going through steps in life. We made it through elementary school, we got through middle school, then to high school, then to college, then we got our PhD year and our MD, and after each of these steps, there's a sense of stopping. And you often hear this in graduation speeches, but we don't follow it up very well. That really is a very false notion, as Robert suggested. We really need to be curious for life. We need to keep learning for life. I think parents who don't learn themselves regularly have students or children who don't learn. Where are the technical magazines around their living room? What do they watch on TV? What field trips do they take their kids on, to Robert's point? Are they curious when they drive by a factory making automobiles or making pharmaceuticals? What's in there? Who's in there? What are they doing? Do they understand where their iPhone came from, what the components of it are made of? And I think very often with this notion of credentialism and graduation certificates, we lose a lot. And just one last point on this. The most successful people we know and entrepreneurs were all college dropouts. George Westinghouse dropped out of college. Edison never went to college. Bill Gates dropped out of college. Right. Steve Jobs, that we just lost yesterday, dropped out of college. And there's a reason, because they're so curious and they're so driven, they don't want to spend time in a formal process when they can get out there and really do it. And, of course, these names I've given are exceptions. I mean, Facebook's another one. But they're on and on and on, that we shouldn't be overly impressed with formalities. We should get out and learn and read books. Don't do what the teacher says. Go to the library. Get on the Internet. Go to Google. If you're curious, you can put any word you can think of into Google, and your curiosity will begin to be satisfied. You don't need a teacher for that. You just need to be curious.
We are talking about science and science education. Yeah, and we have frivolity now among the panelists because we've just encouraged them to defy teachers, students. We're talking about celebrating science here in Indiana. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. I'm talking with Dr. Robert Yost, Peter Kissinger, Dr. Jennifer Hicks. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking about the importance of celebrating science here in Indiana, and really the importance of science education, with our guests, Dr. Robert Yost, the IUPUI Department of Biology, Peter Kissinger, Purdue University chemistry professor, life sciences business entrepreneur, and Dr. Jenny Hicks, science curriculum specialist with the Indiana Department of Education. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, John.
How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly. Your question?
Oh, I just wanted to provide a concrete example of what youth in Indianapolis can do in terms of field trips, science field trips. I work for an organization with a team of people who provide, field trips for finding information, both hard copy and digital resources, and we teach kids how to get online and find articles and reports using a specific little free card they can get. Mm-hmm. And they can also go around and pull books off a shelf and take those books with them back to school and home. Mm-hmm. In addition, we do programs with Lego. Mm-hmm. And that would be in terms of like engineering concepts. Mm-hmm. So kids can actually physically put together Lego pieces and build little machines, and they can also program these Lego robots. So they're learning, you know, not only hands-on tactile problem solving, mm-hmm. but they're also doing like information problem solving. So they're going through this kind of a scavenger hunt to find specific resources, books, and articles, both hard copy and digital. Do you have any guesses what local organization I work for?
Okay, we are going to throw that one to Jenny Hicks real quickly. She's got a good guess.
Well, I'm wondering if you're over at the Indianapolis Marion County Public Library over here at the Central Library.
You got it.
At Cyberworld. Yes, I've done some stuff with you guys. So at the Learning Curve.
Yep, we're at the Learning
Curve.
Yeah,
they're a great resource.
Thank you for the call, Ryan. I appreciate it.
Yep, you're wonder.
Thanks.
John, I might just add, the Learning Curve
please.
Is actually going to be there on Saturday.
So, again, we probably ought to promote the event again. Tell me a little bit about Celebrate Science, when it starts, and where we are again.
Sure. We're going to be having an all-day event at the Indiana State Fairgrounds beginning at 8 o'clock until 5 o'clock. It's free entirely, and there'll be things of interest for people of all ages.
We have gotten an email question from a listener by the name of Caitlin Neal, who says, I'm writing to ask, at the event this Saturday, will there be any programming specifically aimed at increasing the participation of girls and young women in math and science? As we discuss improving education, is anything being done to improve the gender balance of students pursuing degrees and careers in these fields? Robert Yost, please.
Yes, that's a very good question that the caller has, and we are going to have women represented very strongly this Saturday. We will have the Chemical Society being there with a very strong presence of female individuals. And there'll be several student organizations, for example, women engineers. So we do have the opportunity for many types of individuals to be there. And we're going to be representing individuals across all ethnic groups.
We are talking about the importance of science education here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Kyle, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly. Your question.
Yeah, my question pertains to getting folks that are qualified for science and mathematics into our education program. I am currently in a transition to teaching program, but unfortunately in the business side of things, I want to start teaching in mathematics. But my understanding is that a lot of these math and science teachers are not getting into the teaching side of the field just due to the lack of income, trying to get those folks to come on board in math and science teaching is proving more and more difficult. How can we incentivize these individuals, or how can we make the program a little bit easier for those folks who want to start teaching math and science and really get them involved in the education side of things?
Good question. Thank you very much for calling. Well, Robert Yost, I'll throw that one to you first, but I think we'll take it around the horn. Basically, do we need to pay teachers, science teachers, more to get them to enter the profession, share their knowledge?
Well, John, I think that the caller does have a very valid point. The pay scale just is not what it would be, for example, if individuals were to go into the private sector and work at local businesses. But I think also addressing the caller is the fact that it's also true that college professors, for example, are not necessarily paid for the type of work that they do either. So across the board, the caller has a very valid point. Respecting education and recognizing that it has value is very, very important for individuals from K all the way through college and beyond.
Well, let me make it a little more pointed and throw it to Jenny Hicks. Should we pay science teachers in public schools more than we pay English teachers?
I don't want to get it beat up over this one, but I also went through a transition to teaching program and had a PhD before I started teaching science, so I probably could have made more money doing something else. I think all teachers should be paid more in general, but I think what you can do is sometimes teachers don't necessarily want more money, but they want more time. They want other things. They want great professional development support. They want more time to be with colleagues instead of so much time strapped to the classroom. So I think if districts right now whose budgets are very tight cannot provide more pay for teachers, what they can provide is better support. And for those science teachers, you know, maybe they're going to teach instead of five, and I'm speaking like middle and high school, instead of teaching, say, five sections, give them four and give them an extra period off so they can prepare for science class. And science class does take more time to prepare for. I mean, it just, you have to put together all the laboratory materials, and so there's a lot more prep time. And so I think if we can't pay them more, let's give them more time.
I mean, Peter Kissinger, I know you're not going to hold back on me if I ask this question. should we pay science teachers more than – I'll move it away from the English. I was a history major in addition to journalism major. Should we pay science teachers more than we do history teachers?
I believe that in every profession – excellence generally results in higher compensation, and I don't think it particularly depends on whether it's an English teacher, a history teacher, or a science teacher. I think people should be judged by their performance. My sense is that in the school systems, we are afraid to judge people by their performance because it's inconvenient. And as an entrepreneur who's been CEO of several companies, it's very inconvenient to give performance reviews of employees. It's uncomfortable. The employee doesn't like it. The manager doesn't like it. It's absolutely something that we have to do. We don't do it perfectly well, but we do it because we know it's really important to do. We need to stimulate people, understand where we have deficiencies, and give them incentives to overcome those deficiencies and do better. If you have a system where everybody is treated the same, they're all part of some sort of a contract, they're not judged based on quality, this is exactly what you get. I mean, this is the... I could get a little wild here, but this is what didn't work in Mao Zedong's China. It didn't work in the Soviet Union. If you take people out of an environment where they're judged for their effectiveness, they become ineffective. That's why the cars in East Germany went nowhere for 30 years until they united with West Germany. It's all part of the same phenomena. People, when they get uncomfortable about judging others, then the system falls apart. I mean, we have issues at Purdue, and we have issues at the Colts with the quarterbacks, mm-hmm. right? We judge their quality. We measure their performance. We pay them according to their performance, not at Purdue. We just fix their knees. but it is a real difficulty when you take people out of a system where other people judge the quality of each other. Then everything falls apart. And yes, this is very risky. Often we screw it up. There are lousy managers. There's lousy principals. There's lousy school superintendents. There's lousy presidents and provosts and deans in universities. But that's the way we are as humans. If we value diversity, one of the elements of diversity we have to accept is that some of us really are lousy. and in order to accept the good ones, we have to some way take the others, but we have to exercise judgment as to who's good and who's not good. And if we don't do that, then we're not all at Lake Wobegon. We're not all above average, and that's a problem.
Jenny Hicks, you want to jump in here?
I think one of the things Pete makes great point, and one of the things we need to come to a consensus on is what makes a great science teacher. We can't really evaluate those folks until we have other folks in the field to really provide them with good professional feedback about how to become a better science teacher. And I think we're at a crossroads right now at figuring out how to do that. Most principals weren't science teachers. Most of them don't know how to judge good science teaching. It's no fault of their own. They just have not been educated about how to do that. So we're going to try to work to make that happen.
We are talking about science education and the importance of celebrating science here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Trish, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Certainly. We've got just a couple of minutes, so if you could get to your question.
Hi, I'm a chemical engineer. In high school, which was in the 80s, I did not know my curriculum and how it led to, you know, a profession. And I think maybe in science education in high school, it would be helpful if they drew those lines so people could get jazzed about, or students could get jazzed about their education. You know, what am I going to do with this physics? What am I going to do with this bio? My daughter is in Sycamore, and she's in second grade, and they're taking the science, and they're putting it in their art class, and in their computer class, and in their language arts class. So they learn how to research, and they learn science through a few different avenues. So I think there's success there. But I just thought in high school it would be good if you could trace the lines from what you're learning to the actual, you know, profession.
To application.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for the call, Trish. I saw lots of nods of affirmation around the panel here. I think, actually, Peter, you were doing a thumbs up.
Absolutely. I mean, I have an analogy for this. Suppose you were lifting weights. That you would go to a room and you'd lift weights and you'd exercise, and you had no idea what football was. Would you find that very exciting? In sports, we work out, and we prepare, we get ready, because we know what the end result will be. We know what we want to do. And the caller makes an absolutely excellent point. We often have to go through the basics, the weightlifting, the jogging, the running, the push-ups, the sit-ups, and we have to do that with the periodic table. We have to do that with arithmetic. We have to do that with understanding plastics and so forth and so on. And if we don't understand where these things ultimately will be used and how much fun they are, then we're not as enthusiastic about those things. And I think that's particularly true, for example, in a subject like mathematics, which traditionally has been taught through a lot of practice, memorization of procedures.
By rote.
Basically. Long division, which I'm sure you didn't like. And manual.
Put a dollar sign in front of it.
Manual calculations of the square root of this or that. And basically, but when you, if you looked at an iPhone, just to, sorry to lose Steve Jobs, but if you look at something like that and you look at the components in there, the solid state semiconductors, the display, the organic chemicals that cause different colors to come up on the screen, the batteries, the electrochemistry, the metallurgy that makes the case and the components, then maybe when you're studying these subjects back in school and you're looking at the periodic table and trying to understand how we put things together from that, you might get a lot more excited about it. I think this caller makes a wonderful point. I think science is a liberal art. Every bit as much as English and history and social studies are liberal arts, history, by the way, is largely driven by science and technology evolution. About science. It doesn't have to be just a novel. It could be a biography of a scientist, for example.
We've got a great email question. It's actually right on that point from Peter Berger, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, in Indianapolis. Says, I think that a lot of kids can enter a subject better through a story rather than as a collected body of knowledge or as an experiment to be tried. Is anyone trying to teach science through history of how we came to discover the things we knew? We know, including the blind alleys we went down in getting there. Science is taught too efficiently, I think, without any of the human aspects of how we got to where we are. Jenny Hicks, you're shaking your head. Is no one doing that?
No. I think that there's some really great curriculum out there. We're using some of it in the Indiana Science Initiative. And one of the things we emphasize is using an engaging scenario. So bring it to life for the kids. Start the lesson with some really great scenario that is directly related to their daily lives, something that maybe in current history, current events, or something that's in their environment that's been going on recently, maybe something in the news. So we encourage engaging scenarios. That's what we call them. You could call them a story, a history. So that really brings the children in.
And I'm going to give you the last word here. What do we want people to do on Saturday? Where do we want them to go?
John, please. We want them to come to the Indiana State Fairgrounds on 38th Street from 8 to 5 all day Saturday to experience science firsthand and up close. And actually, it will incorporate a lot of things we talked about here this morning, becoming curious, learning what's been done, seeing a variety of people doing what scientists do.
And what time does it start?
It starts at 8 o'clock, and it'll be there until 5.
Okay, so it's an all-day event at the Indiana State Fairgrounds at Celebrate Science Indiana. I would like to thank my guests for appearing with me today, Dr. Robert Yost of the IUPUI Department of Biology. Robert, thank you for being here. I enjoyed talking with you.
John, it was a great experience, and I think we've learned a lot, but we do have a lot to talk about.
We will, and we will have you back to do that. Peter Kissinger, Purdue University chemistry professor and life sciences business entrepreneur. I want to have you back so we can talk about the life sciences business entrepreneur part of that again. Peter, thank you for joining the program. You made it lively.
Enjoyed it very much. It's a lot of fun, but it's a very important subject, and we need to make improvements in Indiana.
And Jenny Hicks, science curriculum specialist, Indiana Department of Education. Jenny, thank you for being here.
Thanks so much.
We will be back next week when we will be talking about Alzheimer's disease. You can join us next Thursday at noon. Please have a good week. I'm John Kroll.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alsep. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday at noon for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m. And you can listen online at WFYI.org.